You're listening to the Capitol Hill Talks. I'm Andy Walters. Co-working is a growing phenomenon where independent workers like writers and programmers rent community-focused office space together. On the 4th of June, I sat down with two founders of co-working spaces to take a closer look. Here's the interview. Today, I'm talking with Jacob Sales and Tony Bacigalupo, both founders of Coworking Spaces. Jacob Sales is the co-founder of Office Nomads, a co-working space in Seattle where I'm a resident. Tony is the founder of New Work City, a co-working space in Manhattan. Jacob, Tony, thanks for coming on the show.
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
So take me to the moment that you first opened your doors. What's running through your head at that moment?
Yeah, I remember it was really scary. We have 5,000 square feet, and back then it was empty, and that was really scary because I would send Susan text messages about, like, well, I've got to go to the bathroom. What happens if somebody comes in?
And Susan's your co-founder.
Yeah, Susan Evans is the co-founder of Office Nomads, yeah. But getting into the motivations behind why we were doing it. We didn't necessarily know that we could pull it off, but we definitely knew that there was a need. So the only question is whether or not we could properly find, or we can express the need that we were meeting, and whether or not people would hear us and find us. And well, they have.
Yeah, it's funny in the beginning because, you know, you reach out, you get a lot of people involved, and the actual response is never the same as what people say that they're going to do. You know, so you could have hundreds of people saying, yeah, this sounds great, this is awesome, and then you open your doors and, you know, obviously not 200 people walk in the door on the first day. But what we really talk a lot about with new co-working space owners, and what I think we both did a pretty good job of early on, was not falling into that trap of planning a space, opening our doors, and then crossing our fingers and hoping people show up. We did a lot of groundwork before we opened our spaces. We gathered people in cafes, we gathered people wherever we could, built as much momentum as we could, so that by the time that day happened when the doors opened, it's a scary moment, but it's not too scary because you know that there are other people who are on their way, who are going to help you out, who helped you build the furniture the night before, you know. And so it's a scary moment, but when you're doing it right, you should have a lot less to worry about than you might think.
How do you convince somebody who's working at a coffee shop all the time, or maybe out of their home office, how do you convince them to get out of that rut and get into a space?
You don't. They come to us. I mean, when they're ready. The thing, really, when it comes down to it, is that it's not about us trying to attract people who might not want what we have to offer or might not, you know, really think that they want it. It's about helping people to understand that they have options. And that the beauty of the world we live in now is that if you have a computer and can get an internet connection and that's how you do your work, then you can work wherever you feel like, and that you can change your mind at any moment. And so if someone prefers to work in a coffee shop or in their house or wherever they like, awesome, great, keep doing that. If you need to get out, if you need to be around other people, which is something that, as I worked from home and as a lot of other people work from home, we don't have access to those things. We're a solution for that. And that layer is a layer that to date has not existed for independent workers, for location independent workers. So we're simply providing people that option when you need to get around other people that you actually can talk to, and also have a dependable designated place to go work that isn't your house, that isn't a cafe where there are a lot of trade-offs. We can also be that place for you too.
What kinds of people end up in these spaces?
Well, that's what's really fun about it, is that your coworkers are in all sorts of different occupations, and we have a very wide variety of occupations, all the way from, you know, Titanic explorations and ornithologists to city planners. A lot of tech people have very flexible jobs, so most coworking spaces tend to lean tech. But that can also be in a lot of creative fields like design, web development, app development, all sorts of things. Writers are also another really popular co-working.
Which, when you think about it, is kind of crazy that you have, I mean, in what other points in history or what other contexts have you seen such a diverse set of people working, in some cases in very, very different ways, being able to coexist, occupy the same kind of space, use the same kind of resources, and work together. It's really incredible when you think about the potential that that has for mixing up different kinds of cultures, people of different skills and backgrounds. One of the authors that that co-working space owners really like Stephen Johnson, who wrote the book Where Good Ideas Come From, and he talks about this idea of serendipitous collisions, and that basically good ideas are generated when people bounce ideas off of each other. So the fact that you have a space where, you know, you have an ornithologist sitting next to someone in a tech startup, sitting next to a grant writer, like, cool stuff is going to come out of that. And that is really, that's really exciting and incredible.
And it's fun because I think the lazy way to think of a lot of community building things, which is when we focus around the software of these social networks that have been prevalent so much lately, is that you think, oh, well, all the different programmers are going to want to sit next to each other, and that's how you're going to, because you have common interest because you both click the programmer tab. But when you get beyond that and you just have a bunch of people in a room that make the choice to work at a co-working space, that and that being the only commonality between them, then you've got the, you know, the astrologer next to the astronomer having a conversation about, you know, the nature of life.
Yeah.
And that's just a normal day at the office.
So let's talk about co-working as a phenomenon, because there's been a movement, really, of co-working. It's not just a few independent spaces. You guys have conferences. You just came back from one not too long ago, Jacob. I don't know if you were there, Tony. How do you see co-working fitting into a broader agenda, either political or economic?
When we think about work, there's basically roughly a culture of two basic things. There's employees, people who are working for somebody else, and the perception of that even being in 9 to 5 for a salary, full-time job with a boss, you know, all of this sort of handled for you. And then there's sort of folks building startups, people who are building, you know, growth businesses, and there's a big culture around raising capital and trying to build a big explosive business. And the problem is that those are the only two paths that are really well built out. But in between those two things is this void that we don't really talk too much about. You'll see an occasional article about it, but it's this world of people who aren't employees, but who aren't building growth startups, who are what we probably the best word to describe it is independence. Anybody from a telecommuter to a small or medium business, freelancers, contractors, people who occupy co-working spaces. And the thing about this is that where we're going is a direction in which that middle ground, that middle area, is growing very fast. And the two other areas are eroding into that. Employment, as we know it, the relationship between employer and employee is changing drastically. The culture for earlier generations was work for one company for 30 years. They're going to take care of you. Stick around. The relationship is very strong and faithful between the two. And that is all but completely gone now, right? People will hop from one job to another. Employers will cut your pension benefits at the last moment without a moment's notice. But more so than that, in a positive sense, the relationship is becoming one less of a subservient relationship. I'm your employee, and more of a equal relationship. I have a service to render. You have, you know, a need for that service. Let's do business. And that's been referred to in a lot of different ways. The free agent nation, the creative class. That people have been eating away at this in a lot of different ways, but it's still not thought of in our culture as something that is distinct and separate and unique and important from employment and startups. And so for me, where I see co-working being really interesting and very important is that it's actually a piece of infrastructure, one of the first that exists for that forgotten middle area that is growing, and it's a foundation for far more services and infrastructure for you know, more people to get involved in it. And that's how we're going to dig ourselves out of the problems we have today, is by empowering people to work for themselves, or at least think of work not as something that you wait for someone to hand to you, but something that you go out and pursue for yourself. And I think that the communities that we're a part of are playing a big role in that and need to play a much bigger role going forward.
Yeah, I think the magic happens where you, as those defined terms of work are breaking down and more people are getting better, different ideas about what they can do to support themselves, and then they start seeing options like co-working where they realize, oh, well, I could never work from home, you know, then they see co-working and the final piece is in place, and like, wait a minute, I could do this. And then they have the picture and the path forward, and it really provides a great catalyst.
So on that line, how do you continue to empower people even more than what co-working is doing today?
There's a lot that needs to be done, honestly. When you think about the extent to which structures have been put in place to facilitate traditional employment that we're used to thinking about, like people tend to be frustrated at how little choice they have in a traditional job, but it also takes care of a lot for you. So work in this location from these hours, stop working at this time, and we've got your legal covered, we've got your healthcare covered, we've got your taxes figured out, you know, we're going to deduct it for you, you know, we have a boss who's going to tell us what to do, those kinds of things. There's a lot of structures in place to manage that. And the trouble with foregoing that is that you have none of those structures when you're on your own. Co-working replaces a couple of those structures. It gives you a place to go. It gives you people to work alongside. But it doesn't give you just about any of those other things. Those things need to be explored and rethought and repurposed the same way that we took an office and rethought that.
I mean, there's still always going to be a place for big business. Well, I'll put an asterisk next to that. But at the same time, more and more of individuals are realizing that this space is, it embodies a lot of the things that everybody's working for. You want independence, mm-hmm. but you also want stability. You want, you know, freedom, but you also want safety. And it's coming to that conclusion, and more solutions. Co-working is just one of them, as a mixture of the best practices of all the things that we've learned up until this point.
If you put it in a historic context, you think about the transition we made in the United States and other Western nations in the previous century from the beginning of the 1900s, where most people were working blue-collar jobs, where the money that they made was the result of work they did with their bodies, factories and farms, things like that. And by the end of that century, the opposite was the case. Most people were white-collar workers, and they were making money with their brains. When you look at what's happening now in this century, moving from knowledge work to creative work, that need and that relationship changes as well. You can't be creative in a cubicle. So in order, even as an employee for another company, or if you think for large companies that are going to employ the use of a lot of people, if they're increasingly transitioning to being companies that are employing people for their creative capacities, mm-hmm. then they need to manage them in ways that maximize their creative capacities.
So let's talk about the other side of co-working. There's obviously this debate in co-working about you've got one side that says, well, there is such a thing as authentic, and then there is unauthentic co-working. We were talking before the interview about a certain space in Seattle that seemed to be more focused on the real estate, filling kind of butts in the seats type of philosophy. What do you guys make of that other side? And do you think there is such a thing as authentic and unauthentic?
I think that there's the conversation gets muddied a lot, but ultimately, co-working is a really powerful way to kind of point in a general direction of the kind of work that we're talking about. There's definitely a distinction between spaces that focus on the need they're meeting, trying to fill, is the facility itself. Like, you need, you know, a place to put your computer, you need an internet connection, you need a meeting room, you need stuff. They're basically a micro stuff lending business, micro real estate. And there's definitely a place for that. I think that is a very, it doesn't really provide a lot. And I also, in the 5 years that Office Nomads has been around, we've had some wonderful members and some great loyalty from our, you know, quote unquote customers that love being nomads, and you don't get that kind of devotion from your quote-unquote customers just renting them a service where they can come, consume, and leave. And you certainly also can't make a deeper impact on their life and as well as just the overall community that you're a part of. I don't think it's a matter of whether or not there's a place for everything. It's just, I'm just more interested in being in that space. So that's where I put my energy.
You guys are involved in the broader movement that, like you said, is interested in helping people spawn these types of communities. So my question is, how do you balance the competition that you might eventually have with these people along with the collaboration aspect?
Well, I think competition is a little, I think it's getting outdated. And I think that it specifically comes from the idea that if you're a baker and you make and sell bread, and if somebody comes and makes a bakery right next to you and makes and sell bread, that all the customers that they have are customers that you don't have. That means two things. That means that there's a finite amount of business to be had, and that if somebody takes the business, that you don't have it.
Kind of like a zero-sum game.
Exactly. But that is really no longer the case. So Office Nomads, we have 100 members. We can't really fit a lot more. We can't really do what we do if we were could have 1,000 members, because we wouldn't be as close-knit and intimate as we are. So we're limited in scope. And there are more than 100 freelancers in Seattle. So we can do what we do. We can have our community. We can have our priorities and focus on the people that are in our space. And we can also encourage people to find other spaces. And we're actually better off if somebody comes to Office Nomads and doesn't quite like it, they want us to change, if they can find a space that is more suiting to their needs than trying to change and try to meet everybody's right. needs.
But don't you think that's a luxury of being in a newer market?
No, I don't think so. I think that...
I mean, it won't be like that forever, right?
That's true. But even in a world of imagining Seattle with 50 co-working spaces, right now we have about 10. Even in that world, then you're going to start getting into the degree where there will be so much variation that you might have 150 things, places that we would think of as co-working today, but it's just not considered co-working. It's just kind of the normal place to work. And I still think there's enough work. I mean, just think of the amount of restaurants we have. I think in Seattle, we have a beautiful companion business, which is coffee. You go to a corner and there's 4 coffee shops on the corner. Are they really competition? Or at the same time, you know that that corner is where you go to get coffee. And whether or not you get it on, you know, from each one of those 4 places, those four businesses are at that corner and they're in business because that's where you go get coffee. So it's ridiculous. The coffee scene in Seattle is ridiculous. And I think that co-working is, you know, even if we had 50 co-working spaces, we wouldn't have nearly as many.
It'd be close.
Yeah. What one of the people in our circles had said is that the biggest competition is awareness. And the more people that come on building co-working spaces there are, the more we have other people who are helping to spread the word, to reach more people, to explore this exciting new thing in ways that we never could. They're compatriots, and we're all exploring this thing that right now is not very finite at all and won't be for a long time. And we can all coexist really well.
Where do each of you see your spaces going in the next, say, 5 or 10 years?
I think that Office of Nomads is in a nice place where we've reached a nice stability point and we're pushing capacity. We have explored the idea of opening a second space, and we backed away from that, mostly because... well, specifically, the neighborhood we picked is close to my house, and so I would be there, and I don't want to leave the office. I like that office. And then we've also looked at growing in size, but if we were 10,000 square feet and 200 members, would we be twice as better off as we are now? And we're focusing on being stable and enjoying it and enjoying the community that we have. The beauty of a co-working space is it's always changing. You know, people come, people go. There's constant change, but then there's also still the stability, which is part of the joy of working there. And instead, Susan and I are putting our ambitions into other things, working on collaborative projects between spaces and helping other spaces open. And we can have our personal growth outlets be in many different directions without risking the thing that we've built over the last 5 years.
It's changing so fast. You know, we got involved in this thing so early on And it's come so far so quickly in the last 5, 6, 7 years that to predict the next 5, 10 years out, especially the extent to which it is accelerating the growth and the diversification of it, I couldn't even begin to tell you what we're going to look like in 5 to 10 years. But I think from a philosophical standpoint, I can say that I'm very clear on what we represent and that we are going to always stick to what that is. And if 5 or 10 years from now we look pretty much the same as we do now, I wouldn't be that surprised. If 5 or 10 years from now we look absolutely completely different than we look now, I wouldn't be surprised either. And somewhere in between that is where things are going to shake out. And we really just have to stick to what it is that we believe in. Collectively as a group, what we need, because we are a community first, and always just stay centered on that and use that as the compass that guides us forward.
Tony, Jacob, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.